This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest actually in the studio, Mr. Julio Garcia. And also, you're probably noticing these new upgrades that we have inside the Wolf's Den. Julio gets to experience it today.
He's very special.
Yes. So.
Thank you. I feel special.
I've probably put on 10 pounds because of this guy. And we'll get into that.
So just a little brief bio on Julio. So Julio Garcia is a co-owner of Umbresis Social Mexican Kitchen, which is my favorite. I'm not just saying that because you're here. It really is. Julio's from Jardines de Morelos, which is a city outside of Mexico City. His parents divorced when he was 9 years old. After the divorce, he started living with different family members. And when he turned 19, his father asked him to move to Houston, where his brother had lived for a long time, was not doing that well. He moved to Houston without being able to speak any English. He had only two options, which it was to work restaurants under a roof or work in landscaping under the sun. He didn't like the idea of working under the sun and chose to work as a dishwasher. He started moving up in positions among the restaurant industry. He had a vision to open his own restaurant business, which he looked at a very difficult thing to achieve because it was very expensive to start a business and he didn't have the resources. For 5 years, he planned a business concept going from the restaurant menus to business plan and started contacting investors and started looking for professional advice on how to open a business. After those 5 years, he started falling into depression because he had tried many things but had not been successful at starting a business. He left everything in God's hands. 2 weeks later, after giving up, he received a text message offering him the opportunity to purchase a franchise, to which he was asked how much money he had or was willing to pay. He didn't have any money. He was told to give all the money he had and he could pay the rest in 5 year period. It only took him 6 months to pay off his business and after he started his restaurant owner adventure. Quote from Julio, "It does not matter how much money you need, education, influence, believe that God has great things for you and if completely believe in him and in his love, great things will come." That is awesome, Julio. Such an inspiring story, right? I actually have never heard this story, so I really would like our listeners to give more of a background on yourself.
So again, as the bio says, I moved to Houston at the age of 19, and I think it's not said properly on the bio, but I had a choice to do landscaping or wash dishes, and I thought I was too good looking to be on the
So that was the real story.
That was a deciding factor for me. And in reality, my brother already worked in a restaurant, so he asked the owners if I could join the company, and I think the position I applied for was a busboy, and they said, no, if you want anything, we have a dishwasher. Yeah. Which, you know, for me, a job is a job.
Yes.
That was my beginning.
Wow. That's huge. And tell us how it, more about the story about where you, you know, what did it start off with Umbresis, or did you, what was your first company, and kind of how did you, I guess, parlay that into where you've gotten today?
Okay. I work at a restaurant. It was a beautiful hacienda-looking restaurant by Memorial. The name of it was Las Alamedas. Oh. It was a huge pink building, beautiful windows. Funny story. So the restaurant that we have in Katy now belonged to the former owners of Las Alamedas.
Oh, wow.
They went out of business, and I took over, and now it's Umbresis. So that was my beginnings, dishwasher. And I remember back then, I would look up to the servers. Servers were so cool, and they have all this cash and nice cars. And in my head, 19 years old, I prayed every single day, God, allow me to be a server one day. That's what I wanted. I wanted to die being a server, have cash in my pocket, drive a nice car.
Yeah.
You know, they had good-looking girlfriends. So in my head, that's all I wanted. 19 years old, my brother enrolls me in high school, and all I wanted to do is go to high school to take those ESL free classes so I could learn English. 2 years later, I remember a professor, when I enrolled, 19 years old, she's like, why are you doing this? You won't graduate. But the same professor, 2 years later, he's like, look at my transcript. He's like, man, you need one more class. Mm-hmm. Make it up. So I need you to graduate. So I graduated from high school in 98.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I grew in the industry. I was promoted finally to busboy, which is a position that I had applied for originally. And then from busboy, cocktail waiter, waiter, bartender, wow, assistant manager, manager, director of operations. But I remember back in the day, I hated the restaurant industry. It was so demanding. Guests sometimes were rude. You had to put up with so much. So I wanted to go. I went to school. I have a degree in economics and finance. I was awarded a full scholarship to go to Duke University and get a master's in economics.
Wow. Wow.
And in my head, I was going to be a big, I don't know, Wall Street guy. That was my... But somehow the restaurant business always pulled me back. I think that was the industry where I always made the most money. And out of necessity, I truly stayed in it. Wow. And I remember after going through this journey, one day in the back of my head, I thought, man, if I'm able to do all of this already for mm-hmm. somebody else, why not have one of my own? Mm-hmm. So I thought I was very smart. I had my degree in finance, economics, you know, I ran restaurants. So I started mm-hmm. knocking on doors, writing menus, concepts.
Wow.
I contacted every investor, everybody that had some resources as an investor, landlords, you name it. I worked tirelessly on top of my full-time job, just creating these opportunities for myself. And I remember 5 years went by. And you said I can get personal, but so I talked about what happened. And imagine you believe that you were born for something else, mm-hmm. and you work so hard every day to achieve it without any luck. Mm-hmm. So after 5 years of doing this, I became suicidal.
Wow.
Mm. I wanted to kill myself because the depression, the anxiety, the desire that I understood, I couldn't do it on my own. I didn't have the money or the ability. So I remember after buying the sleeping pills and just truly being down, I decided to go to church and I enjoyed the service. And I remember an hour and a half service crying uncontrollably for, I don't know, the first 10 visits. And one day I felt comfortable with who I was, happy again. And I said, God, it's in your hands. Mm. You want it to happen? Fine. If not, I'm just going to be a very good business manager. And as the bio says, 2 weeks later, I get a random text from this guy that I had not spoken with in years.
Wow.
Years. And he's like, hey, I'm selling my business. You want to buy it? And I'm thinking in the back of my head, because of everything I had gone through, this is a trap. There's something wrong here. This mm-hmm. things don't happen.
Yeah.
Do not happen this way. So I worked up the courage, you know, put myself out there, and I went to the restaurant. And got there, they had 2-hour wait. It was mm-hmm. busy, and I'm very concerned, thinking there's something wrong here. You know, this very successful business, why is he selling? He was already tired. Mm. So he asked me how much money you have, and I told him I have my life savings, which is nothing compared to what the business was worth. And anyway, we signed a deal, and here we are.
Wow. So for listeners out there, I mean, you started at 19 years old, like just having that dream, that passion, that desire to want more, right? And, you know, not giving up with that dream, and just no matter the depression, you constantly just kept pushing through. Like, what gave you the courage? I know you talked about God giving you the courage, but anything else that gave you the courage to kind of like push through and say, hey, I'm going to make this a reality?
I think it was just, it was a big dream for me. I think I hated, what I said earlier, I hated the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. I realized today it's not the industry that I hated. I hated the people that I work for. Our industry, I feel, is very neglected. Mm-hmm. We hire a lot of the workforce that's studying in the workforce, the young people. Mm-hmm. And many restaurateurs believe that the servers, the busboys, the staff, is just a tool for their means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I realize that they make you work 60, 70, 80 hours. You know, just a very demanding business. And I realize that that's what I wanted to change.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted I wanted my staff to be treated differently. I wanted to empower my staff. So at Ambrisa, I think you've seen it when you walk into the restaurant, right above the hostess stand, we have a declaration for our staff.
I've seen that, yeah.
And the declaration reads that they're gifted, talented, passionate, driven individuals, people that were born for greatness in life, you know, people of destiny. And when you, if every business owner was responsible enough to empower those new generations of the workforce, those new employees, and guide them properly, I feel like they would do so much more in life. They would accomplish so much more. But it's very common to see it in our industry. They start somewhere, they grow a little bit, they fall back, and then they just get into this cycle of depression, drugs, whatever.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to make my parents proud. Mm-hmm. I remember when I bought the restaurant, in the back of my head, I was thinking, if my earnings are at least the same as my salary, and I'm perfectly fine. So it wasn't even the money. You know, it wasn't that I wanted to buy something or I just wanted the opportunity to do it for myself.
Well, I'm seeing too that not just the money, but you wanted to impact people too. You want to mentor, coach these young generation that they can also have that same thing.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you for sharing all that. But I've always, from the time we've got to know you through the restaurant and all that, you've always had a huge heart and you can see that and it's evident, you know, you care for people. In your staff and working, you're obviously super intentional about that culture that you built. Can you speak to that more? And as you've grown, is that, I know it's been a challenge for us, especially as we own now in multiple cities, it's hard to keep that culture and that same tightness as when you're smaller, when you get bigger. Now you're, what, three locations. Is that hard to still, you know, carry that with as you grow? And then how do you do that?
Yeah, some of the things that you maybe do to create that culture, you know, to keep them motivated, especially during the pandemic, right, too. That's another story.
Yeah, culture, it's very important, you know, and I think is how do you build it? How do you create it, right? How do you establish it? What is that? Mm-hmm. But for us, we have a culture of empowerment. Right, I'm going to celebrate your victories. I tell the staff, I pray every single day for my staff, and my prayer is that God will fill them with small accomplishments every day, and that those small accomplishments will fuel their vision for the future, fuel their confidence, the way they see themselves, and maybe, you know, I want to create the next generation of leaders, the next presidents of the United States, the next.
That's awesome.
But I think I can do that. You know, and it's not me that the ones. Just by providing a little bit of love, encouragement every Monday. So we have a big part of my goals is I need to influence every single one of our staff members, and as we grow. You know, when we had Ambrisa in Vintage, we had 50 employees, right? Today we have over 200 employees.
Wow.
And our industry, you're always hiring people. And in my head, I need to meet every person that enters my company when they enter the company. And I need to speak love, faith, passion, drive, vision. So we have an office in City Center, beautiful office, and we have a huge conference room. So every time we hire someone, we invite every leader in our company to be part of that meeting.
Wow.
And I play a worship song. I pray for them. And then I give them words of empowerment. It is not rare to see our staff, new family members cry. Remember, I had a lady, and I found her story and why it happened. From the moment the prayer started, and the words of encouragement were taking place, she couldn't stop crying. Mm. For the entire hour and a half of meeting, she couldn't stop crying.
Wow.
So that to me, it's the foundation of a culture, right? We don't feel that we work with employees, but we work with people that have purpose in life. And I don't think they do the things that they do for the restaurant, I think they do for themselves.
Yeah.
Is it?
impacting people.
Yeah, this is a question for myself as you manage people like that, and because you said you look for, or and you pray for opportunities to praise them and have, I think, minor successes. Is that what I heard?
Yeah.
Yeah, as they build throughout the day. How do you handle the opposite part of that? And maybe it's just, I've been told I'm negative thinking, but, you obviously, I think in the restaurant industry, you got a very, for like our industry, it's very hard for somebody to make a change and move like their asset to another management company or buy from a, but you have an impression to make an impact on a customer. Because if you fail that one time or they have a bad meal, they're probably not going to go back, right? And so you have a smile, I think. So how do you keep that, that them, say they make a mistake, and I think we're all human, we're all going to make mistakes, how do you manage people to do, how do you, because we've been told at times in our career, and we've had seasons where, I think we've had a CEO tell us, Sean and Joni, you guys are focusing on the 5% mm-hmm. of the negative things in the business and not the 95% of things that are really going well. And so how do you see that and do that? Yeah.
That 5% that you're talking about is so vital, so important.
Correct.
To address mm-hmm. And address it quickly, timely. Yeah. Our job as leaders is to help our staff develop good habits. And oftentimes, those mistakes come from, I don't think anybody that is going to work is thinking, I'm not going to do a good job today. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make mistakes today on purpose. I think it's just a matter of bad habits and poor staffing levels, management. But when we do see those happen, we just correct it right away.
Yeah.
And we have people say, hey, man, I've done 10 times great mm-hmm. today. And now you just, tell me what the one mistake. So we correct issues right away. It used to happen to me. I don't think I was afraid. I was just very cautious mm-hmm. of correcting people. And I would let things, I'm not going to say anything this time. Yeah. And then maybe not tomorrow.
Yeah.
And maybe not this week or not. But then a month goes by, and it's not just one person doing it. Now it's everybody.
Right.
And now it's normal. Mm-hmm. When I know that's not what we should be doing. So I've learned that a long time ago. So now time I see it, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't forget, mm-hmm. this is where we're heading. Plus, we created a common goal. Everybody, if you ask the staff, we're fighting for the same thing. Mm-hmm. So everybody understands that hospitality is a human right. So it's not just for the wealthy. It's not just for people that go to these five-star restaurants. So even if you have somebody who doesn't look like they can afford it, those people deserve hospitality even more because maybe they saved an entire week to mm-hmm. dine at a restaurant. So we have some ideals that everybody follows. We take pride in everything we do. We truly do. Everything we do is very intentional. The product that we purchase is, when possible, it's local. We want to support the local economy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it costs a little bit more. Because we know that the money will come back mm-hmm. fresh, local. It's not organic. It's not. It is cage free, range free. That type of thing. Because I believe that I want to feel proud of putting that plate in front of the guest. Mm-hmm. And I don't want a meat that is from, I don't know, China. I don't know where it comes from, right. Or what it's been through. And just because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the leadership because it's something you brought up because I think that it comes back to leadership too, right? Because I think when I love what you do meeting them in your office and you talked about the woman crying, I think that says a lot about the leader that you are, right? You're there to impact people, empower people. That's your job. That's what leadership is, right? You're not there to manage them and tell them what they're doing wrong, right?
Correct.
Because then they're probably not going to be there very long. But I think that's part of it. And we talk about that self-development here. Like everybody in our company, we're big on self-development. So if you work for our company, you better, that's why you're here. You wouldn't be here otherwise.
To grow.
Yes.
I want to take a step back to your story. And what was that time period from, I guess, when you became a dishwasher to owning your first restaurant? What time frame was that?
So I got here in 96, my first restaurant 2009, so 14 years.
14 years, yeah.
14 years.
And along that journey, there was a lot of work and hours, and because people only see usually the end result,
yeah.
You know? They see you now and...
The failures, the challenges that you had to take to get there, right?
Can you share some of those? You've mentioned a couple, but anything that maybe you looking back, and it's maybe not a regret because you had to sometimes go through things in order to open your eyes to it, but anything that you would maybe done differently or maybe you didn't do well?
I still make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel like I'm new in the industry.
Right.
People look at me sometimes and they ask for advice and, you know, and I'm like, why are you asking me? What do I know? Like, growing in the industry, just growing in general, I think this journey that I've been through, if you ask me, hey, will you do it again? I don't know. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean,
you should have stuck with the economics.
I should have stuck washing dishes, enjoying that position and doing it well. I have made multiple mistakes along the way. I've switched jobs thinking that I was going to make more money somewhere else, and it ended up just not being what I wanted and regretting my previous position. I don't know. I got involved with the wrong people at times. You know, I was just very naive at times. So if you say you want to try this, I'll try it. And
yeah.
So people think that you have to be this perfect human, come from this perfect background and this perfect family to achieve that type of goals. I'm sorry, but I think the mistakes are what makes you who you are.
Oh,
the human that you are, right? So I thank God every day that the businesses were not inherited from my family, and you know, now I'm just enjoying this ride. I thank God that it was me, my struggles, my vision, my courage to do it, because you know I can enjoy it now, you know, and I make decisions that are very calculated, because it wasn't easy. It was very difficult. Even when I opened the first franchise that I purchased, after that I remember when I bought it, it was doing, I don't know, $1.5 million, $1.6 million in sales. By the end of my first year, it was doing like $2.5 million. It had grown tremendously. And I had great relationships. I think that's where I met you first, the first restaurant I owned. And it was busy, it was full, people were happy, staff were good. So then I decided to open my second restaurant. And this pride, this, man, I know it all, look at me, I'm perfect.
I've done it once, I can do it again.
I opened a second restaurant without doing demographic studies or homework, or somebody's like, oh, this is a great location. Next to Cheesecake Factory, this and that. I'm like, oh, man, I can't. Oh, man, I owned it for 3 years, and I lost money for 3 years. So, but I understood, you know, the design didn't go with the shopping center. It didn't match the accessibility, the being such a, you know, next to such a giant, you will see people coming to the parking lot, and that thing would just swallow people. I'm like, there's nothing left for me.
Yeah.
And in spite of us doing things right, so I learned that. I opened a restaurant by the Galleria in Greenway Plaza, beautiful restaurant. And I remember the first day we opened our doors, I had 8 servers, dressed, press, aprons, ready to go for lunch. I think for dinner we had something like 12 servers ready to go. We opened on Monday morning. I remember Monday morning we had 1 table.
Wow.
And then Monday evening, 3 tables. So that's another learning experience for me. I learned that downtown, that area, it's slow. I mean, it did well eventually.
Yeah.
But it was very nerve-wracking. The Ambrisa, maybe it has to do with the brand, but Ambrisa Vintage. First day we opened, maybe for the relationships, we had 45-minute wait. And then it's grown from there.
Yeah.
Ambrisa Cypress, first night we open, 2 hour wait.
Wow.
And it hasn't stopped. Mm-hmm. And then you go to Katie and it's something similar. So, you know, you learn. Mm-hmm. People invite me to go to River Oaks and open a Breeze in River Oaks or Midtown or Hythe. No, thank you.
Yeah.
But you learned a lot from those other mistakes.
Yeah, from those failures.
That you're contributing. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you still have all that, you know, beautiful hair there after all that stress. Okay. You know?
I have a question for you because that's something that I noticed the very minute that we walked into your restaurant. Like, you were so friendly. Everybody was friendly, but the owner, you know, comes up and talks to every single one, right? And, like, I noticed that you have this ability to connect with people, and it's cool that you're using that in the restaurant business to really impact people. But connecting with people, is that your unique ability? Is that something you have to work at every day? Is that something that comes natural to you, or do you work at it?
It was hard at the beginning, but it's going to sound a little egotistic, but I do it for me more than the guest. Imagine you're walking around and everybody's telling you how amazing you are, everywhere you go. So I could have a day where I'm a little down. Then I go to the restaurant and I talk to the first table. It's like, oh my God, this is amazing. You're amazing. So my ego just goes. And then the next table and the next table. So it's something that I truly enjoy. Getting feedback from our guests. And sometimes it's not positive, right? Mm-hmm. Which is useful as well.
Yeah.
But just turning the situation around, making sure that the guest leaves happy. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think my true gift is public speaking, empowering people.
Mm-hmm.
But second to that is the restaurant. I always say this, if I could own just one restaurant, mm-hmm. I would be the happiest person on earth. Because, you know, I remember the first location, I knew every guest, every staff member, their needs, their wants, everything. And I enjoy that every day. I hugged every single person that came through the door. And I felt like I had a personal relationship with everybody. But as you grow your company, well, you lose some of that. Yeah. And you try to create that at the next restaurant, and the next staff members. And it's very difficult. So part of the company incentives is that we select, we're very selective of our staff. We create the right strategies and systems, training for our people. And we, in hopes that we can take somebody like me 19 years ago, 20 years ago, a server, a busway, a host, and develop them into business owners. Mm-hmm. You know, Jacob, the current franchisee owner of the original location, right? So he took ownership 7-8 months ago. And I can tell you, I don't like telling him this because it'll go to his head. But the restaurant is doing more in sales. The staff is the same. And the reputation of the business, 5 stars everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's amazing. That's the aspect of the business. Mm-hmm. But if you look at him, ever since he purchased the business, he bought a brand new car, house. He has time to go to soccer practice with his kids. He has the ability to go to church on Sundays, you know, which to me, that's why you do the things that you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that says a lot about your leadership because you're not there very often at the Vintage, which we miss you a ton, but I feel like we haven't lost that like personal touch, right? Like they still know our name when we go in there. They still know what we'd like to order, right? And so you created that company and that culture.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing.
I want to talk now about your beautiful wife, Amber. So we don't get to talk about much about working with your spouse. We don't get too many entrepreneurs that are in that are, they're both very active.
Right.
So tell us what that's like working with your spouse and is it easy? I know it's not.
how did you get her to start working with you to begin with?
She was in the medical field.
Okay.
And, you know, I remember when I owned the first restaurant, I needed help with events. And, you know, she's like, I'll stop doing what I'm doing and I'll come and help you. You know, that's what I love about Amber. She loves what I love and she has a passion for what I have a passion for and she can get behind it. And you know, people see me sometimes as the face of the company and maybe the brains behind it. I'm just a good looks man. My wife is like
she's the true brain behind it.
Amber, so we talk about we haven't talked about COVID,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But when COVID happened, I remember I was working at Cypress and the news, as of tomorrow, no more dining. And I remember walking around the restaurant. My heart sunk when that happened. I knew it was coming, but and then I look around and I can see the fear on every staff member. Mm-hmm. So me, I called all staff meeting the following day, and I remember standing up and then just, we're gonna make it. We're gonna do great. We're gonna thrive. Don't worry about it. The company's gonna make sure that you guys mm-hmm. have enough. So, and then I saw my staff go from like afraid to empowered and, mm-hmm. and ready to work. So that was my part of the my contribution. Mm-hmm. But Amber, I remember I went home and I was devastated. Mm-hmm. Maybe I got home around 10, maybe around 10 p.m. And she was on her computer creating an online platform. Wow. She didn't go to sleep until 5 o'clock the next morning, but she finished her platform. So we went from not doing anything online to having a full online service the next day. So, and that's, I didn't ask her. Nobody said, hey, would you,
no. Yeah.
On her own, this is what I gotta do. And me, I went to bed at 10:30 and woke up with that.
You gotta look good.
Well, she adapted pretty good.
I know, that's something we wanted to touch on, because I think, you know, there's obviously, you know, there's a lot of restaurants that failed mm-hmm. during that time. And you guys seem to pivot extremely quickly, because I guess thanks to Amber.
For the record, I saw Amber at the restaurant. She's the type that rolled up her sleeves and just got to work, because yeah. I saw her at the restaurant.
But you guys just overcame, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of people, I think when that all, they froze or they mm-hmm. panic or froze would be a better analogy. And you guys just really like said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do online deliveries. We're going to do pickup, you know, and it just.
You didn't even blink. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but that really helped carry you later, because not only your customers saw all that mm-hmm. and wanted to support you even more, but it made you a stronger probably organization. So it helped into the second location once everything kind of rebounded and came back. Is that?
You're absolutely right. So we started the pandemic that way. And I remember the first day we provided the online ordering system, we had a company like Uber Eats mm-hmm. linked into it, and our guests started to order through that platform. But then that meant that my servers were not making money. Mm-hmm. We just the food that we... Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we stopped that. We canceled that service and we said, okay, we're going to deliver ourselves. So, and this is the beauty of our guests. People would order $10 worth, $20 worth, $30 worth, and the servers would come back with a $100 tip, $50 tip, you know. And it was, I think they made more money than
than the restaurant.
Than the restaurant. Yeah. So we were never short staffed. None of our staff went on unemployment. No, we just push forward, and you're right. You know, now we have both businesses, the dining business and the to-go margaritas, to-go food, all of that delivery. Yes.
Yeah, it was special to see you guys in that. I mean, Joni and I were very fortunate. We were in an industry that was what did they call it? Essential. we were able to still come into the office. We were still able to operate mm-hmm. pretty much as normal. But I mean, we had to make a lot of changes, and I think. Adjust is just like any other business that was successful, but the restaurant industry was the hardest hit, and that was just something. And it was neat to see you guys just take charge and not just depend on the government bailouts and everything else, but really take charge on your operations.
Absolutely.
So it was special.
Go ahead. I was just gonna ask, one thing that we ask our guests all the time is what's your next?
What's our next?
take over the world?
where do we start? So I'm going to keep pushing the boundaries. I'm that type of person. When I feel I'm getting too comfortable, you know, I question what I'm doing mm-hmm. and I see how can I be doing it differently. So we purchased our first piece of land in Town Lake. It's 2.2 acres, and we're building our first freestanding music venue. In Cyprus, and we have contracted one of the best designers in the U.S. to help us design freestanding umbrellas. So God willing, moving forward, everything we'll do is just a freestanding units. I mean, if you ask me, I'll take over the world tomorrow. But I'm also very fearful of making mistakes. So even though in my head I'm 100 years in front of me, my own reasoning, I think I tell the staff I'm the biggest enemy of the business because I'm very cautious. Mm-hmm. I enjoy opening a restaurant every year or two, taking my time, enjoying it. But if you ask most of our staff members, because keep in mind right now we have maybe 10 managers that are ready to take ownership of their own. So if you ask them, man, we open 10 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I can't. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
The when you mentioned earlier about, it just dawned on me, but and I should have realized this. But you know, you think about a lot of young people. When they get out of high school or they're in college or out of college, what's their first job? It's always like working at a restaurant.
Yeah. And so you it was my first job.
Yeah, it was John. Yeah. She worked at TGI Fridays, and so that was her.
I was a server. I was that server you looked up to.
With the money and the cash and the nice car.
I didn't have a nice car, though. I had a car that I barely ran.
Yeah. But you have a lot of influence on young, young generation, I think. Yeah, it's probably... you know, some people overlook that, but I think it's you have a power of influence and a sense of responsibility, right, to impact them. So, and that's usually a point in their lives where they're trying to find themselves and they're moldable. But what advice would you give to somebody that's just starting out as an entrepreneur? Because I think you've learned a ton now. And what advice would you give them if they're just starting out, if they were that 19-year-old kid, born here or coming from another country, what would you tell them? What's the best path to?
I always say this to young staff. life, it's a journey, and it's your own, right? A society, parents, friends, family will have, at this age, you have to have this finished and this accomplished and this done. And when we don't accomplish it according to the timetable, we tend to be very anxious and, you know, we don't function happy. We function from a negative perspective, I believe. So my advice is enjoy the journey, even if it's difficult, even if you don't see that you're going anywhere. Develop your talents, develop your vision for who you are. Believe, and I always say this, everybody in life will have a big break. Mm-hmm. Everybody. I don't care who you are, where you come from, what your background is. Everybody in life will have that big break. The question is, will you be ready for it? Because if you're not, if you spend all this time trying to meet somebody else's expectations or go in the direction that people think you should be going, then when that big opportunity comes, you might not be ready for it.
Yeah.
So enjoy the journey. That's my only advice. I know it's very difficult. But everybody I know, everybody that is in the industry or a successful entrepreneur will tell you the same thing.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I knew then that I was going to reach what I've reached so far. You know, I would have enjoyed the journey. Mm-hmm. But instead, you know, you wake up concerned and, man, I'm not married yet and haven't finished my degree or I didn't go to school. No, just enjoy the journey.
Enjoy.
I love that. Enjoy the journey. It doesn't matter what industry, just enjoy it.
Yeah. Just enjoy it, yeah.
And you only have today, right?
Yeah,
so, I mean, absolutely. Make the most out of today. So, yeah. Well, this was fun.
How can our guests get hold of you? Tell me, I know the different restaurants. We'll have it in the show notes too, but.
Yeah.
So you can reach me on Facebook or Instagram, Julio Ambriza. I'm always at the restaurants, Ambriza in the Vintage area, Luera. We have another Ambriza in Town Lake. In Cyprus, and our most recent restaurant, which is in La Cintera and Cinco Ranch.
Nice. And we still need to visit that one. Yeah, it's the only restaurant we haven't been to. So, yeah, we'll have to check it out. But it's just too far. It's going to have to be a trip. But, no, I mean, we really appreciate this. I think you added a ton of value today. And we love learning more about you. And we think you're doing awesome things. So just keep it up. If you guys got something out of that or enjoyed it, please share this, like it, give us 5 stars, please, to share the show and impact and reach more people. So you got anything else?
Yeah, no, and check out Ambrisas. It's one of my favorites. Yes. I always say that.
You can probably see us there at least
a
couple times.
2 or 3 times a week.
So anyways, we'll see you all next week.
See ya.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.